Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, July 16th, 2015. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. And it's just after 2 UTC while we're recording. So welcome back, Yvonne.
Hello.
You know, the big topics for today, we're going to talk about Iran, of course. We're going to talk about space.
Since we didn't jump.
Pluto thing.
But we ran, right? No. Oh, God. Anyway. My jokes are getting lamer as I'm getting older. Anyway.
They were never that great, Yvonne.
Exactly my point.
We're going to talk about space because we had the Pluto flyby, and we haven't talked about space in a long time, Yvonne pointed out.
Yep.
Probably since, like, Mars rovers or something.
Yep. Yep. That's what I'm guessing.
And we're going to do a follow-up on Greece and what's been going on there.
And I clarified to Sam that it's not the musical.
Because you do every time. Every time we talk about Greece.
I'm consistent.
Are there any other countries that you always need to clarify when we talk about them?
Well, I don't recall any other that have names that have anything to do with any musicals.
I mean, we have on occasion had to clarify when we're talking about Georgia, which Georgia we're talking
correct.
About.
Correct. Yes, that's true. But not with a movie. We don't, or musical. We don't get that confusion. We do have to clarify which Georgia we're talking about. Yes.
And since we're going to be talking about Pluto, I'm sure we're going to have to clarify.
It's not the dog.
Not the dog. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's true. It's not the dog either. Well, but one of the things that I discovered this week, and Sam apparently has... quite a following of strippers, okay?
What? Right
on his Twitter feed.
What are you talking? You talked last week. You talked about that one person who.
Yeah, but somebody else favorited something else that was based on your Twitter feed, and it turns out to be another porn.
Really? I didn't even notice this.
Yes. Yes, I went, I'm like, since that happened last time, I went, I saw another favorite, and some random thing said, oh, I favorited this, and I'm like, what the hell? So, clicked on it, boom, porn. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't understand. It's like, it happens with any, and it's related to your stuff, not, you know, if I do something that's unrelated to you, it doesn't happen, but if it's with you, man.
So wait, was this you... retweeting something of mine and then they favorited it on your account?
I responded to a tweet of yours and boom, somebody favorited whatever the hell comment I made about your tweet and it was, it's porn.
Oh, there you go. I guess.
So, it's like, you know, I mean, you've got quite a following.
I doubt they actually follow me.
I'm sure they don't. But, you know, I guess you've got quite the,
We went over this last week. This is not exciting. They have these accounts, and they just look for stuff, and they just favorite stuff, and blah, 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 and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I know. But you know, so they're not real.
Hey, you
they're
used not, to complain all the time how all of Facebook's...
Out there. So this is what happened. You put a comment about something. I'll pull up what the hell it was. And my reply to it was, this is genius. Okay, all right. And then somebody favorited my reply to you. And all there is, so I clicked on their profile on Twitter, and all there is quite a lot of pictures of tits and ass all over the place, basically.
So just in this case, by the way, they didn't favorite anything of mine. They favorited your stuff.
It was a response of mine to you.
And this is my fault how?
Yes, I say it is.
Not that you're complaining particularly, I don't think.
I'm not complaining, but I mean, I think it's silly. I mean, God, honestly, I mean, what
well,
the
you,
hell?
Well, you used to bitch all the time that all of Facebook's recommendations for you were like...
Look, there is so much porn on the internet that, can I be honest, I don't really need additional porn on my Twitter feed, you know?
Because you have enough already.
There is enough... quite more than enough everywhere about it. So I just think it's funny. And let me see. The conversation was, it was an article that you wrote about The Last Stand. You were reading The Last Stand of Old White Males.
Okay? Yeah, it was an article somewhere by some conservative columnist put this out.
Right.
And I thought it was an interesting article. I read it and I tweeted.
And I replied that this guy is a genius. And then I was favorited by
and,
you know,
I'm, And I think you are being sarcastic. I don't know for sure, but I got that impression.
I was very sure I was being very sarcastic. Yes. Okay. I mean, this article was just, I mean, ridiculous. I finished reading it. I was like, what the fuck? Anyway, so I mean, apparently from the big three pick, we're not going to talk about the actual election today. Right. So
maybe something in the lightning round.
Maybe something. Yeah.
But it's not one of our big topics this time.
It's not one of our big topics. But you know, so anything else happening other than, you know, I know that you've been porn follows you around, I guess.
Yes, porn follows me around. That's the exciting thing. I was going to give a quick update. This could be in the lightning round, but what the hell? Last week, I mentioned at the end of the show how I was importing all my mail and how I was just letting it go to see how we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember this? So just as an update for everybody, it has now been going 8 days and 54 minutes, and it is still says time remaining less than a minute.
Well, let me ask a question. What's the rotation? What's the planet with the slowest day?
I don't know off the top of my head, but there's Mercury.
Probably Mercury.
I don't know this. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, planet in our solar system. I mean, obviously, probably Mercury. So how long do you think that day is? Okay, so there we go. All right, great question. Planet. I mean,
you really want to do this? Like we? Yeah.
No. Okay. All right. Well, maybe it's related to something else. I don't know. Maybe it's slow. I don't know.
No. So, there are a couple factors here. One, I expected it to be slow anyway. It's been going 8 days, and I sort of made up I said, look, I will or reboot my computer until I absolutely have to. I will just let this run. And if I really need to look at my email, I'll do it on my iPhone or something. One thing is I did get, like, I'd mentioned the computer was all fast and doing all kinds of things all better than it was. Not fast, but like better than it was. But over the course of the week, it slowed down to the point where it was basically unusable again. But I think I basically understand what's going on at this point. Because I was able to do things to speed it back up again.
Okay.
And basically, it's when, you know, I have multiple backup methods, right, to try to deal with things. I've got the time machine, I've got a clone of my drive that's supposed to happen daily, and I've got Backblaze going. And I think it is one of those three is choking on how much I have. And is having trouble. And I haven't 100%, I think I've eliminated Time Machine. I think Time Machine is okay right now. And I think between Backblaze, which I have for offsite backups, and Super Duper, which I have for the onsite clone drive thing, one of them, or both of them, is just having trouble when they have to do it, and especially if they're both going at the same time, because they're backing up an external drive, which is already a slow connection.
Right.
And I think it's just overwhelming things. Cause like what I found, and I got to the point of finally testing this. I suspected this like for most of the week, but I just tested it like within the last hour. I shut both of those down and boom, almost instantaneously, the computer went from being so slow it was barely usable to being just fine. Now, of course, on a long-term basis, I'm not going to not do my backups.
So what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to experiment some. We'll find out.
Okay.
And I know I'm like really obsessive about this, and I have three different independent kinds of backups going, and maybe I'll go down to two for a little while, but I don't know. We'll see. But at least I, at this point, have identified that if I shut these things off, I can get the computer to be faster again. Which is good. And I kind of knew this all along. I mean, I just was in denial.
So right? You're in denial. Okay. All right.
Because I didn't want to stop the backups, right? You know, so I was like, no, I don't want to. But, yeah, so for the moment, I've
said. You're kind of as recalcitrant as I was with the damn frickin' whatchamacallit.
Your antivirus stuff, Samantha.
Right.
Yeah, because you don't want to not have that. I mean, well, you were stupid for having antivirus stuff on a Mac, but you know, but in general,
give me a fucking break.
Anyway, but so we'll see. And for the moment, I've stopped them all for while we're doing the podcast, and I set Backblaze to only go in the middle of the night for a while to see if at least it gets out of my way.
You don't only go in the middle of the night. I mean, good Lord.
Well, the problem is it has problems catching up, but that's all I really had, and no one cares about this, so I should have left it in the lightning round.
Right. Anyway, all right. So we'll take a break and we'll talk about something. Sam's gonna pick which one goes first.
I think we're gonna do Iran first.
Okay. All right.
We'll be back after this talking about Iran and nukes and. Stuff. Back after this. Okay, here we go. Iran, we got the deal.
Yes.
So the Obama administration, the Iranians, everybody came out. When was it? Wednesday, Thursday? I forget. Anyway, they announced that they had indeed finally, after years of negotiation, come to a deal that everybody agreed to, and they were all very happy about it, seemingly. Now, to be clear, nobody got everything they wanted. It was a compromise. That's what happens when you do a negotiation, usually. Yeah. The Obama administration has been making the case that this is a net positive. There are all kinds of slowdowns for Iran's nuclear program. We got all kinds of inspections in the deal, right, et cetera. The Iranians are very happy because they're going to have sanctions relief, and they feel like they won because they are able to keep their civilian nuclear program. They're not having to shut down any facilities entirely, et cetera. And of course, the Iranians have been 100% consistent from the very beginning, claiming that they actually didn't ever intend to make a weapon. This was all about civilian nuclear power.
Okay.
And now, you know, lots of people don't believe them. Some people do. But in any case, they've been consistent about that. Of course, then the backlash started immediately. Israel, Netanyahu came out saying, you know, basically how horrible this was and how the Iranians were going to take over the world. And all kinds of people saying this is a betrayal, saying that it's not strong enough. We gave up everything. Iran gets all this stuff. Iran is going to eventually get a nuke because of this. And, the inspections aren't strict enough because we can't do any time anywhere. Inspections, we have to give them some advance notice before we go somewhere, etc. What's your take, Yvonne? I can guess, but
well,
because we've talked about this,
it's before. Like every negotiation. I mean, it's the same thing. Look, we got a deal, you know, it wasn't going to be everything that everybody wanted, but I think that there's strong interest. I mean, there are. The Iranians obviously are doing this deal because they want to reduce their isolation. I mean, that's the reality. And it's, you know, as much as everybody wants to criticize the deal, I think that if you look at from a perspective of accomplishment, I mean, the fact that we actually got a deal with Iran done in any shape or form is quite an achievement at this point, especially with all the strong opposition that there has been to doing a deal with Iran.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been pretty clear on this show that I thought a deal was a good thing. I thought that the Iranians are rational. They're not like this big evil demon who's going to do things.
They're not ISIS,
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to go for the ISIS comparison, but they're not going to intentionally do something that is going to harm their national interests. And a lot of the neocons sort of start out from a position that they're evil and you can't negotiate with them because right. they're not trustable and right. they're going to take the first opportunity to nuke Israel, not caring about the obvious consequences that would befall them if they ever did that. And, you know, what gets me in all of this stuff is when you listen to all of the rhetoric against this deal.
Right.
It all comes back down to that core thing of not even believing that you can... negotiation is just outright bad. There's no like, yeah. there's no right. real evaluation of well, what are the in fact, you know, is this does this result in something better than you would have had without it or anything like that?
I say the answer is an absolute yes.
Right, but what I'm saying is that the arguments against it tend to come back to we shouldn't be negotiating in the first place, or the only negotiation that's okay is a complete capitulation and a removal of the Iranian regime, and a complete decimation of all of their military capabilities, et cetera, et cetera. Because they're all this stuff about, we have to be able to go in anytime we want to anything, whatever, with no notice whatsoever. And, well, we should have tied it to release of American prisoners. And, we should have tied it to them promising not to to fund various groups in Syria and Lebanon and Israel and blah, 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 blah. All of this other stuff to just bring it in that are obvious, like, non-starters from the very beginning. And there's this sort of notion that, like, you know, it's okay. This didn't go far enough. But why are you comparing it against this pipe dream of getting everything you want? The comparison is what is it better than nothing? And the status quo. And I think anybody who really sits down and looks at it says, well, okay, you know, we may not have like. You know, as deep controls and as deep inspections that some people would like, but we have some inspections. Right now, we have none.
We have nothing. Absolutely. We have absolutely nothing.
And so tell me how it's better to have nothing than it is to have something.
What about this whole thing that a whole bunch of people have been making the brouhaha about the four prisoners, Americans, that are in Iran?
I just wanted to finish off one other thing.
Go ahead.
Because the one argument that says, you know, why is it worse? It's, well, because we're giving them their money again, and they can spend their money on supporting terrorists or whatever. And it's like, well, okay, but were you really thinking that you're going to keep sanctions forever? And I guess the answer is yes. Sanctions forever until suddenly the Iranian regime falls and, you know, we get a Western democracy.
What? Right.
You know, like, yeah. come on. This is sort of fundamental assumption, too, that it would be better to keep the sanctions on and then just assume that, okay, they probably will develop more nuclear technology, but then, hey, if they do that, then we can go to war. And wouldn't that be exciting? Because one of the things I that I did not remember that I saw referenced to one of these articles was that during the W administration, George W. Bush,
mm-hmm.
There was another round of these negotiations that came very close to a deal.
Mm-hmm.
All of the countries in the P5 plus one or whatever it was were on board except for us. The United States said we couldn't go along with the deal. And the deal would have been somewhat similar to the kinds of things we got now, restrictions, inspections, things like that. And what happened after we said no to that deal? What happened is that Iran's nuclear program accelerated.
Right.
In many ways. Like, there were many more centrifuges, much more enriched uranium, much more this, more facilities built, whatever. And these were all things that Iran had potentially in the negotiations agreed to restrictions on. And the George W. Bush administration was like, not good enough, and walked away. And what was the result of that?
A lot of stuff that we didn't want, bottom line.
Yeah, and so it's like...
It was not productive at all.
I mean, so what you see in a lot of this is the fundamental, you know, the neocon temperament does not accept, really, negotiation as a valid way of dealing with things. Because negotiation involves... You know, letting the person compromise on the other side get some of what they want.
Yep, it's not capitulation.
The fact that by not negotiating, they still got some of what they want, and in fact, perhaps more. That's irrelevant.
But those are the people that never get stuff done. The people that I know that are unwilling to negotiate and compromise are the people that never get anything positive done. That's just reality, and it is what it is. So I don't know. I mean, we've got a deal. It's not a perfect deal. There is no perfect deal. Okay. I think that, like you said, is it better than the status quo? The answer is yes. And so, why would I be upset about this? Why would anybody be? Other than just because, you know, you just can't be satisfied with anything. Or you think, like you said, they're evil and all the stuff that you mentioned earlier.
Well, and you mentioned before the question of, well, why didn't we bring in the various Americans that held in Iranian prisons right now? And that's very similar to the, well, why don't you bring up support of Hezbollah? Why don't you bring up involvement in Yemen? Why don't you bring up this and that, whatever? And the answer, Obama addressed this at his press conference today multiple times. He rambled quite a bit. The bottom line was that they wanted to keep it very narrowly focused on the nuclear issue. And I know I pronounced that wrong. I'm sorry. They wanted to keep it very narrowly focused on that issue because then they could push forward on that and actually get a deal without providing additional portions of leverage. Like if you said, you know, okay, we want these people released too. Well, the natural Iranian response is, okay, well then what more can we get for that?
Right.
Whereas if you keep the issue completely separate, you do this deal and then you talk about that stuff separately, then you eliminate that linkage and you eliminate these additional points of leverage.
Right. Right, right, right.
I think in many cases, like one of the places where negotiations do fall apart is when you try to make the grandiose deal that solves everything. You know, and sometimes that works out, but most of the time, if you want to get something done, what you do is you concentrate on one area where you think you can come to an agreement and get something done, and you say, okay, let's ignore all of the other places where we disagree. Let's work on this, because in this particular area, we have some potential common goals. We have some things that we want to, that would be good for both of us if we got it done. And let's go there. And I think, and so that's what the president did here. That's what the administration did. And I think it worked out. I mean, the And I guess some of the neocon opposition, too, it just falls apart at that very first stage of saying that we think we can get a win-win situation out of this, you know, because the Obama administration is thinking, hey, let's reduce the possibility of Iran getting nukes. Let's make everybody more comfortable on that space. If they do that, then we've also proven that we can negotiate with them if we build some trust over this. And now maybe we can start talking about some other issues and sort of de-escalate a little bit in terms of the us versus them, you know, evil axis of evil kind of stuff. And instead, you know,
the axis of evil. I hadn't heard that term in a long time.
We recognize that we don't disagree on a lot of things, but we don't agree on a lot of things, but you know, let's find the things that we can work on and let's work on them and let's move things forward and let's get a constructive relationship going and go from there. I mean, Obama made it clear. He's like, look, you know, we're not at the point we are with Cuba. We're not going to be opening full diplomatic relationships next week. We're not going to be, you know, people asked him about formal arrangements to work together against ISIS. He's like, you know, yeah, we're not holding our breath for things like that. But, you know, once you start down this road, you start making those things thinkable, whereas they really weren't before. And a lot of the opposition, I think, comes directly from that. It's like you're sort of acknowledging that, okay, you know, Iran isn't the international pariah that can't be talked to at all. And in fact, you know, they are a regional power and they have some influence in the area, and maybe that's okay that they have some influence in the area, and we'll work with them on that influence to try to come up, you know, find things that are constructive. And obviously that scares a lot of people in the region. It scares Israel, it scares Saudi Arabia, it scares some of the other Gulf states. I saw one analysis. I think it was on Talking Points memo earlier from a reader of that, and I believe I tweeted it. So you know, go look at my Twitter. It was. I think he's got a lot of this right. Posted by Josh Marshall at Talking Points memo. He talks about how each of the people in the region are reacting, and that basically, you know, the folks other than Iran are, you know, all of this is about de-escalating the region and the importance of the region. Obama from the very beginning was like, I want to make it so that, you know, we're not completely and totally obsessed with what's going on in the Middle East to the exclusion of all else. And oil prices going down, with Iran's oil back on the market, oil will probably drop further. We've got all this domestic production going on, so we're less reliant on the Middle East than we were in decades past. That means that, like, we don't necessarily have to be quite as engaged there. And so the people who rely on our involvement there, Israel, Saudi Arabia, etc., are like, oh, shit. If they don't pay attention to us, then we've got a whole different dynamic here going on. And not like we're going to walk away and completely abandon either Israel or Saudi Arabia anytime soon.
Yeah, but listen, when you have deviated interest because, like, stuff changes, believe me, it impacts. I mean, just look, I know it's not directly – it's not related at all really, but, you know, the having some conversations, especially about, around the things that have been happening in Puerto Rico the last 20 years. And the end of the Cold War had a huge impact on that as well. So you got something – a situation over there where, like, you're talking about oils all of a sudden reduced importance, you know, Middle Eastern oil to the U.S. economy. I think that in the long run, you're absolutely right that it will have an impact geopolitically. There's no doubt about it. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, you know, you don't see the U.S. going and, like, freaking going to war in Africa all the damn time. You know, there's no fucking oil, right?
Right.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to happen if we don't need any more fucking Middle Eastern oil? Not going to give a shit. I mean, that's how things are.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is a lot of this, you know, people give sort of pie in the sky you know, ideals about democracy or whatever.
It's all,
you know, in the end, there is a very significant factor that's just, you know, if this area was not friendly to us and was not willing to sell us their resources or let us trade or whatever, what would the impact be on us? And that affects how much we care. You know, so we care about the Middle East. We care about Japan and China. We care about parts of Latin America because it's nearby.
Yep.
But, you know, like you said, large swaths of Africa, whatever.
Whatever.
You know, right. Parts of Asia that aren't China.
Right.
Whatever.
Whatever.
You know, because the impact is low.
Right.
And, you know, and I think this is also one of the differences between sort of the neocon worldview and, frankly, even the liberal internationalist sort of worldview versus some of the more practical. It's a loaded term to say practical, but there's another view that says, you know, look, we don't have those two views sort of agree in America should be involved everywhere. In one shape or form, and they disagree on exactly what they should be doing and how they should be doing it. But the basic notion of the United States as a power that has its fingers in everything everywhere is a key part of that. Whereas I think there's a very strong argument that says, you know, why?
Exactly.
You know, there's certain things that, you know, we could just step back from and say, you know, we care what happens there on sort of a intellectual and human level, but it's not a critical interest that we're going to be exerting American power to try to control the result of. And also, I think there's a growing realization that we're not all that good at controlling those results anyway, and that oftentimes our involvement backfires. And so we may be going in to try to have some wonderful good result, but we end up causing more damage than we solved.
And we've been very good at causing more damage than anything we solved. We're geniuses at doing that.
I mean, and of course, one of the most recent example is Libya. And of course, you can say the same kind of thing. There's a very strong argument that our whole involvement in Iraq resulted in a worse situation than if we'd done nothing.
100%. Yep.
I mean, there's some people who would disagree with that still, but I think it's
fairly clear that we have left Iraqis worse off than they were with Saddam. As much as Saddam was a prick and everything, I mean, look at the situation they got now. How is this any better?
Yeah. And anyway, so back to Iran a second. I did want to cover the politics of this a little bit because we have the entire Republican presidential field has come out against this. There was some question for a while which way Rand Paul would go on it, but he came out against it too. So every single Republican candidate is against this. It's a fairly clear-cut division where all the Republicans are against it. Some of the Democrats are against it. The Republicans look like they're gearing up to, quote unquote, try to stop this. But if you look at it, they can't. Here's the reasons why. First of all, in order, the agreement that sort of went through the Congress a few months ago. If you remember, the Congress said, we have to be involved. We have to be involved. This can't just be a presidential thing. So they agreed on a system where basically this will go into effect unless Congress stops it, as opposed to this being a treaty that Congress would have to ratify or something like that.
I see what you're... Okay, okay. Gotcha.
So that's number one. And one of the reasons that Congress did this, of course, is that they were afraid Obama would just do the whole thing as an executive order and ignore Congress entirely. So let's go through the steps here. So first, in order to stop this, both houses of Congress have to vote to stop it. So this will probably require 50% in the House, which they will almost certainly get because the Republicans have more than 50% and they're fairly unified against this.
Yeah, but they need 60 in the
Senate, they probably need 60 to overcome a filibuster.
Yep.
From the vote counts I've seen so far, they may be close to 60. They might be able to get 60. Okay? But
you still veto that.
But then the president will veto it. And then in order to override a veto, they need 67 votes.
There's no way they're getting those.
And it seems very, very unlikely that they would get the 67 votes they'd need. They just need too many Democrats jumping the fence for that one.
And there's no way that's happening.
And yeah, but let's say things start looking bad and that does happen.
Ow.
I know it's not going to happen, but go
okay,
with
let's say it does.
Let's go
with a scenario.
Let's say that Congress does override the president's veto and says, no, we are not going to approve this deal. There are still two possibilities here. One is the president could say, well, screw it. I'll enact it by an executive order anyway. And it's pretty much jack they can do if he does that. Okay, so that's number one. But let's say the president realizes the politics of that would be really bad. If he's actually overriding, like saying, screw it, I'll do it executive. That would look really bad for the president. He would have suffered a major defeat and then he was going over their heads anyway. So let's say he doesn't do that. This is not a deal between the U.S. and Iran. This is a deal between the U.S., Russia, France, Britain. Who are the others? It's P5 plus one, however many, Germany. So even if the United States doesn't do anything,
the others can enforce it.
The others are still going to relax the sanctions in the way that that was agreed to here.
Right.
And so then at that point, the U.S. will continue to not engage in some level of trade with Iran and this and that, but everything else goes forward. Iran's trade with all the rest of those people is more significant than their trade with the U.S. anyway.
Absolutely.
And so then the U.S. just ends up looking like idiots because they're the ones that are sitting out and this still happens anyway. And then we've got even less influence over what goes on in the future. So the bottom line is this deal is done. This deal, even if all of those hurdles are passed and the U.S. itself does not do our part, it doesn't matter. It still happens without us. And so all of this is really just posturing. And of course it's presidential season. You expect posturing, you expect this to happen. And so you're going to see this whole little battle play out, but the end result is the same. This is done. You know, there's nothing the Congress can do to stop it at this point. Absent the Iranians suddenly saying, ha ha, we fooled you. We're getting a nuke anyway, blah, blah, blah. And that's not going to happen either.
I don't think that's going to happen right now.
Watch this play out. It's going to be fun to watch the battle. They are going to pay, Obama is taking this battle seriously. He wants to win. He doesn't want to have this go out of the Congress and have him veto it. He'll do it if he needs to, but that's not what he wants.
Right.
He does not want Congress to say, don't do this. And so this is going to be a very serious battle, and he's going to try to do his best to not let it get to that point, and you'll see this play out. But in the end, it's just a bunch of people talking, and especially if you look at the presidential candidates, it's just a bunch of them positioning themselves on how bellicose they can be on this issue and how much they can say.
What do you think about the whole Israeli position on this?
I think a significant part of Israeli society honestly does believe that all Iran wants is to nuke Israel.
Well, I think that may be right, but don't doubt that. But their position on the deal, I mean, I guess it falls basically as everybody else, as you've mentioned, right? I mean, you know. They believe they're evil. They believe there's no deal to be made with them. Period. Right. Done. End of Destruction.
Yeah, that's and that's the fundamental divide at the very core of this is from the people who think the Iranians are someone you can have a conversation with and have some sort of negotiation with, even if, regardless of whether you trust them, you have verification steps, whatever, fundamentally, are they somebody that you can talk to at all, or are they not?
Right.
And that's the fundamental divide. And clearly the Israeli administration is very strongly on the side of the Iranians are not someone you talk to at all, ever, about anything.
Yeah, well, yeah. All right. Well, I think we've talked about this enough. Okay. All right.
Yep. We've talked about it way too much, as we often.
That's exact as we often do. Let's
and repeated ourselves many times.
Oh yeah, we're very good at that. Yeah. We should get awards on that. But anyway,
we will be right back after this, and we'll hit space next.
Space.
The final frontier. Back after this. Okay, we are back. And before we hit space, I did want to mention one thing that came in as a new
space. We're gonna hit it.
We're gonna hit space. Okay, it's gonna be tough. But this came across as a news alert while we were recording our last segment. Former President George H.W. Bush breaks a bone in his neck during a fall. They say he'll be okay.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, you know, he's...
Oh, he's been getting very frail.
He's over 90. But, you know, Yvonne and I both have a soft spot for George H.W. Bush, so we wish him the best.
Yeah, we do.
But, you know, when you're 90 plus, things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to note that before we...
And by the way, everybody, I didn't vote for him, okay? All right, by the way. I mean, it is re-election, I think that...
That was, you know, his re-election was both Yvonne and I's first election, and yes. I believe we both ended up as Perot voters.
Yeah, we wound up. I think that, I mean, he suffered through the first hijacking, really, of the Republican Party by a whole bunch of people, to be honest with you. And he got a lot of criticism, but in the end, he did do a lot of things the right way.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, Yvonne and I talk about this. Of all the sort of ex-presidents who I think got a raw deal at this point, I think George H.W. Bush is significantly underrated. He did a lot of things right. I think that he had an actual principled position with his Iraq war. And yes. You could argue about whether or not we should have gone in at all, but he set a very specific, very narrowly tailored goal, achieved it, and left.
With a coalition, with global support, and with others. And the other thing is that he gets...
Everyone was saying that, you know, it's just hollow words. Of course they're going to go on to Baghdad. They're going to take over the country.
And no, he'd been to war, and he had the right people at his side, and he knew that was stupid, and he just didn't do it.
He got Kuwait back. He got a little bit of a buffer zone, and he stopped.
That's it.
And he signed the peace agreement with Hussein, and it was like, okay, that's it. And there are a lot of other things where, you know, people made fun of him, but the wouldn't be prudent thing... Mm. It's actually pretty damn smart, you know, and yes. It's actually similar to Obama's don't do stupid shit, which is his like guiding principle of his administration. And, you know, there's a lot to be said.
By the way, let me put it to you this way, like right now, before we start Pluto, you know, with all the things that have happened like this year, you know, we kept poo-pooing like Obama's administration. I mean, if he finishes with this list of accomplishments under his belt, reopening Cuba, yep. Iran, Obamacare, gay marriage. I mean, the economy where he took it, which was a disaster. We were in a crisis. Okay. Let's be clear.
you know, we're you know, with a significantly improved economy, improved insurance and benefits for people, a reduced deficit, all of these things. You know what? Whatever they can say. I mean, all these people that keep talking about, I don't know, got the morons out in Texas like scared that, oh my God, that we're supposedly that there's a military exercise. Yep, that we're gonna go in there and like take away all their guns and impose martial law, you fucking morons.
Anyway, look, you know, anyway. Yeah, yes, and I think we made this point a couple weeks ago too. This list, agree with, you know, whether you agree with Obama or disagree with him on any one of these specific initiatives, once you add all this stuff up, he has had
a hell of a presidency.
He's had a very significant impact. Like, I mean, and some liberals will say he hasn't gone far enough. I mean, and you and I certainly have criticized him on surveillance and some of the security state stuff, and some of his foreign policy. Conservatives obviously think most of what he's doing is completely misguided and damaging and hurting the country. But one way or another, he's gotten a lot of the stuff he wanted to get done.
Yep.
Yep. You know, and for a long time, it looked like that wasn't necessarily going to be the case. But he's just been grinding these things out.
Yep.
You know, and you know, he hasn't been able to do a lot of it through legislative initiative because of the Republican Congress for all but the first 2 years of his presidency. But, you know, through executive action, through the courts, through this, through that. Your list didn't even include. He's done some immigration reform stuff.
Yes.
He's done. He's doing right now. He's doing an initiative on the prisons. He's got a list of some additional things. He's got a year and a half left, and he's got a list. He's running through, and he's basically. You could tell that at a certain point, he said, "Screw it." At the beginning of his presidency, he was really, really trying hard to say, I'm going to work with the Republicans. I'm going to try to do something.
He's been like, fuck, please, with like, fuck them.
And the Republicans from the very beginning decided their strategy was they weren't going to let Obama have anything he wanted.
Right.
And at a certain point, Obama said, okay, then screw it. I'm not going to work with you. I'm going to figure out what's the most I can possibly do on my own.
Right.
And so there you go.
Anyway, so
Pluto,
space.
Dude,
are you looking at these pictures, man? It looks freaking cool.
It's a cool looking dwarf planet, and the moon of the dwarf planet Charon is cool too.
Yeah. Now, so one of the things I was just reading about right now is that they're realizing that that they were a little bit surprised that the scientists are baffled by the absence of craters.
Yes. And so the reason behind this is basically they figured anything out this far from the sun would essentially be a dead world at this point. It wouldn't be active, as they call it, because there wouldn't be the necessary power from the heat in order to maintain activity over all this many years. But in fact, the absence of craters indicates that there has been activity that would erase the craters, because everybody in the solar system
gets hit.
And like the moon is covered with craters because nothing's going on with the moon. It's fairly dead. You've got, you know, a couple billion years of craters visible there. The Earth, you can only see there are like one or two clearly visible craters. And mostly it's not there because the Earth is very active. All kinds of things are happening. We get hit by something, it gets erased pretty quickly.
It gets erased pretty quick, right.
And we're talking geological time scales, of course.
Right.
By very quick, I still mean millions of years.
You know? Thousands, you know, we'll take, yeah.
But, and so they assumed that Pluto would be of this sort of dead variety where there'd be lots of craters and nothing going on. And I kind of alluded to this a few weeks ago when I said, well, it's going to be a rock. You know?
Right. And then we realize, guess what?
But in fact, there's activity going on. There's flat planes indicating that something came up and sort of melted and distributed. And there are mountains that are being pushed up and there's this and that. And I should point out, there are mountains made of ice, which is kind of cool in and of itself.
Well, that's actually cool as well.
Yeah. So, they're finding just on this first day worth of data, and they're going to be pulling down data for, I believe, it's like the next 9 months or something. Because you know, it's also been pointed out the data link from this probe back to Earth. You know, somebody joked that it's like an old 56K modem, but in fact, it's more like a 1K modem. It's much slower than that. It's like those old 1200 baud modems is about where you are. Mm-hmm. So it took a bunch of data over the close encounter, and it's going to be streaming it back over a long time.
So the thing is, if I understand it correctly from this stuff, is that apparently isn't just that there is a little bit of water, but apparently there's a lot of water there. And apparently all the observations that we had before the planet didn't indicate that that was the case.
Well, we just didn't have enough information to know one way or another. It was all mostly speculation. I mean, remember,
right,
before this last few weeks, you know, the best picture we had of Pluto was a Hubble Space Telescope picture in which the planet was maybe 5 pixels across.
Right.
You know, so definitely. And, you know, what's interesting, too, last time we talked about two times ago when we talked about the Pluto probe, when I mentioned it was coming up, I'd mentioned that, you know, this is also the last time probably in Yvonne, your or I lifetime, where we're going to encounter a brand new world for the first time and see it like this. Unless we come up with some plans. Because I was just looking at the list of objects in the solar system by size. And we've got the sun. We've got good pictures of that. We've got Jupiter. We've got good pictures of that. Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Earth, obviously. Then Venus, then Mars.
That's another bad
thing. Then Ganymede. Which is a moon of Jupiter, Titan, a moon of Saturn, Mercury, Callisto, another moon of Jupiter, Io, a moon of Jupiter, our moon, Europa, moon of Jupiter, Triton, a moon of Neptune, and then we've got Pluto. Mm-hmm. And then the next one out is Eris.
Okay.
That's the next biggest object, and there was actually one of the things that was also resolved was which was really bigger, Pluto or Eris.
And?
Because they're very, very close to each other.
And the answer is?
Pluto wins out very, very slightly by like 1%.
Okay.
And so Eris is the next planet out, or the next biggest thing that we haven't been to. And it's a lot harder to get to than Pluto. Mm. And there are no plans to do any such trip.
We need to do more of this. This is like really cool.
Well, one thing that was pointed out, of course, and I should mention, Eris was one that when it was first discovered, and Eris has a small moon around it, too. Forget about the small moon thing. I may be wrong about that. Eris was initially, when it was first discovered, nicknamed Xena. And another object that was found around the same time was named Gabrielle over the old TV show Xena and Gabrielle. But of course, when they named it for real, they didn't use those names, which is kind of lame. it's like considerably further out than Pluto, harder to get to, no plans to get there. And that's sort of the next biggest thing that we haven't explored. And then we've got some more moons and stuff. And then we've got Makemake. And then 2007 OR10 is the next biggest. And then Haumea. Blah, blah, blah. A few others that we've seen. Then Quowar, if I'm even saying that right. And
Yep.
And I looked Sedna. Those up. Okay. And, you know, so we've got all of these objects. But we've got all the big ones. We've got all the big ones. We've got all the close ones. We're probably not going to get to these others anytime soon.
Well, so, I don't know. Well, but wait. But why?
Oh, the one thing I was
going to... We've got all these billionaires pouring money into space stuff.
That's true.
Right?
The one thing I was going to mention as well is the price of this Pluto mission is the same as two of those new F-35 jets.
That's what I'm saying. It was cheap, relatively. I mean, we could do a hell of a lot more of these missions and find out more about our... Jeez, our solar system, which amazingly, even shocking, despite the fact all the observation technology and everything we got there, I mean, we realize we get up close to Pluto, we realize, shit, we really didn't know that much about it. Now, did we?
No. And you know, and I mentioned we're sort of got all the big ones that are easy to get to, but there are tons and tons of small things.
Right.
We've got this mission to the comet that we're learning a lot from.
Yes.
There are other smaller objects that we could similarly learn a lot from. And not to mention, you know, places we've already gone that we could do a lot more. Like, we haven't been to Venus in a while.
Venus.
And Venus is actually easier to get to than Mars. And there's a lot we could learn there. We do have a lot of plans around Mars. The others that people are, you know, really eager to get to and do more at are Titan around Saturn. We had one mission there, had a bunch of interesting stuff come up, but we need follow-up. We got a little bit of data there. Europa as well. Europa, from all reports, has under the surface is icy. Under the surface, there are oceans of water.
Right.
Liquid water. Some of these places are ones where, you know, people speculate the right conditions for life might exist.
Right.
And so there's lots of interesting stuff here that we could be doing. But meanwhile, what's happening is, you know, NASA's budget is actually getting cut and slashed. There was one tweet that came out just before this. One of the proposed missions was, you know, I mentioned Titan. Titan has lakes on it. Lakes made out of hydrocarbons. So it's essentially lakes made out of gasoline. It's not actually gasoline, but essentially that kind of thing. And one of the there was a proposed mission to actually send a boat to Titan that could like float on the lake and take
that
readings and
cool.
do all kinds of stuff. It didn't get funded.
But that would be cool.
You know, so there are all kinds of these things. And, you know, yes, you can argue about, you know, the relative value of all kinds of things we could spend money on. And people say, well, before we spend money on space, shouldn't we like solve hunger and things like that? And okay, I have sympathy for solving hunger and poverty and things like that. And, but
this is expanding our knowledge of where we are and like, we, you know,
And
I mean,
people point out at times the sort of technological halo of the space program always results in additional things that weren't expected. But I would argue that these things are, in the large scheme of things, relatively cheap, especially these robotic probes. I mean,
yeah.
it's a whole other argument and a whole other story if you're talking about sending people places. That's really, really
hard. That's really, really
and
expensive.
Really expensive.
Yes.
But, you know, sending these robotic probes places is, in the grand scheme of things, cheap. We slight, you know, shave off a little bit more of the military budget. You can fund like dozens of these projects. You know, I mean, I mentioned the F-35, which everybody is saying is a boondoggle and isn't doing what it was intended to do and is way more expensive than it should be. And basically all of this is a handout to the aerospace companies and to the congressional districts where they are. And it's not even really super militarily useful in our modern day missions. You know, get rid of that stuff. You can fund tons of this.
Right.
You know? In a much more productive way. Anyway, there's all kinds of interesting stuff here. This is the big one that everybody was waiting for a long time. I don't even have a good sense of sort of what's the next big one that we're waiting for. I mean, I know there are a number of things in progress, but there's not one that everybody's like, oh my God, we're going to visit blah, and we're going to find out this. This is of the ones that were on the agenda, already funded, already in progress. This was the last big one. And there are smaller ones coming up, and I'm sure there will be exciting stuff, but yeah, let's get more big ones on the agenda.
I'm with you. I want more.
Yeah. And it would be nice to see some more stuff with humans too, but actually the impact like on human knowledge is greater from these robotic missions, and certainly when you look at cost benefit,
and we get a lot more cost benefit. I mean, sure, I would like to send a man up there, but it's just very lot more difficult and expensive. And you know, like you said, I mean, we stuff fine. So let's get more probes out there. Let's find out more.
Agree completely. And that's the segment. I think let's take a break. We will come back. And what was our last topic? Oh, Greece again. Summer loving. Yeah. I can't sing.
I'm not that much better.
We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, Greece. I tweeted sometime over the course of last week that the more I read about how these negotiations were going and how the Europeans were reacting to the various things Greece did and, you know, sort of the arrogance of some of their proposals, that I really wished Greece would just say, fuck you, walk away, say, whatever happens, happens, we're out of here and you're not getting another dime.
Well, you mean Greece would tell would say that, or yeah. You mean that the Europeans would say?
No, I wanted Greece to say that. I wanted Greece to say, you know, screw you guys, we're out.
Here's what happened. You know,
yeah, when obviously what I said did not happen.
Well, no, but let me explain why. Look, I think the Greek voters wanted that to happen. The problem is, and that is why they had voted for Mr. Tsipras.
They voted for him, and then they voted against the deal last week.
Right now,
but he turned around and did it.
Yeah, but do you understand why?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't know if you understand why.
I think so, but go ahead.
Well, here's the thing that happens. Look, if you show up at a negotiation, and you're you need to have a plan B if you don't like the plan A that's presented. Here's the problem. He didn't have a plan B.
He didn't set up his plan B at all.
No. He didn't have any plan B at all. And that's the problem.
The problem is
he showed up over there and he figured that he had gotten to referendum. What he was going to tell him is, hey, you know what? Fuck it. Give me a better deal. So they said, no. What are you going to do? Shit, I got nothing. I got nothing because his banks have been closed now for almost 2 weeks. His economy is coming to a standstill. Everything is a fucking disaster. They don't want to leave the euro. The Greeks voted against the bailout, but then they don't want to leave the euro. The problem is that unless you were really prepared to tell them, fuck you, we're leaving the euro, that's it, we're done, we're out.
Right.
You had to take whatever shit deal they gave you, and that's what he wound up doing. He wound up over there. He didn't want to leave the euro. He wanted to tell him to give him a bigger deal. He had absolutely no leverage whatsoever. None. Not 1 minute. All his banks are closed, and he doesn't have. He didn't set up. If this was his idea, then he should have been working for the last 5 months to say, "Fuck it, let's figure out how we're going to reissue drachmas and pull out of the euro." That should have been in his back pocket.
Yeah, I mean, and
he didn't set that up. He didn't do anything.
Yeah, because it's not like you can easily turn on a dime and decide that overnight.
No, not at all. You needed like at least, I mean, to do it fast, you probably needed every fucking day since he became prime minister. But he didn't do it.
Because fundamentally, he wanted to stay in. He didn't want to say, fuck you, and turn around. He just wanted a better deal. But, like, there was so much disdain here from the Europeans. And I feel like...
Well, it's just disdain because he came in with nothing.
I know he did.
You know?
But I think from Greece's point of view, I think a lot of the arguments have said, look, the deal that they're getting is going to result... in Greece being in economic pain for many, many, many years to come.
Well, agreed. And the funniest thing is that today when the IMF, this is the worst thing about it, and everybody apparently knew this, then the IMF today issues a statement saying precisely what you just said, which they said, this deal sucks. Okay.
And whereas the arguments were, at least some people were arguing, that if Greece did say, screw you, we're out, we're going to the drachma, that it would actually probably be worse in the very short term, but it would be over faster.
Well, right. I mean, one of the problems that they discovered right now, we're talking about this today, is that, look, the banks are still not reopened. And they're saying it may still take about another couple of weeks to a month for the banks to reopen in Greece.
Well, and as you said, the IMF and others have said that, you know, this isn't going to solve it either, even with this deal.
It's Greece, not solving a damn thing.
Greece isn't going to be able to keep up. They're not going to be able to make all their payments. We're just pushing this further down the road again.
No, you're right. They said that they needed more debt relief, that this deal was bad because there was just not enough debt relief in the deal, period. That was flat out, and they're right, and they are right, and which is why I was actually okay with, you know, the Greek voters voting against taking the bailout. The problem is that their president was not prepared for anything else.
Well,
he didn't have nothing.
And the other thing is, as much as I say, you know, they should say, screw you, we're not paying another cent. The reality is, if you actually did that, then you're not getting any more loans. And you end up with the economic situation in Greece taking a nosedive even further.
It's already in catastrophe mode.
The only argument there is that, yes, it would get a lot worse. But if you did that, if you just renounced all debts, and for that matter said, and we're not taking any more loans, not like anybody's going to want to give them to them at any reasonable rates anyway.
Right.
Then, yes, it would be very painful in the short term, but it would lead you to get into a position where you could start crawling back out of that sooner.
Right. But, look, the deal is the deal. By the way, this thing may still fall apart.
The Greek Parliament actually did approve all of the demands that the Europeans put earlier today.
But it's not the Greek Parliament that's a problem. Yeah. My understanding today was that the deal was predicated also on Greece going back to the IMF and applying and getting more money. Okay.
And the IMF is like, maybe
the
not.
IMF is like, what the fuck are you talking about? This deal's terrible. And so that's part of a problem right now, that this deal may not work unless the IMF actually signs off on it. And the IMF already has shot across everybody's bow in Europe and said this deal sucks. And so there was a lot of concern this morning when that IMF report came out about how this deal's gonna work. Tsipras went on TV and basically said they held a gun to my head and I had to sign. I mean, you know, hey, when you show up to a gunfight with nothing, what the hell are you expecting?
Well, but I still think, and we talked about this last week, I think the European approach to this of just trying to strong arm Greece for everything they can get and humiliating Greece for the long term health of Europe as a coherent, you know, project.
It's not been good. I get that, but here's the problem. Here's also the problem. The Greeks went at the end of last year and voted this guy in to basically go to war with the European Union. The government that was there before had been playing nice with the EU and doing all these things. They voted this guy who basically came in guns blazing to say, fuck you. Right? And that's been the problem. The reason why the rest of Europe is telling Greece right now to go fuck themselves is because Greece started the whole thing when they voted this asshole in. Mm. That's the problem. If they hadn't changed governments, then it's a different story. And they already last year they had let Greece lift a little bit of the austerity. They had been like trying whatever doing the stuff, but they voted this guy in, which is basically everybody in Europe saw it as a big double fingers to the rest of the EU. I mean,
yeah, at the same time, you know, it's
and he started the whole.
I understand where you're coming from, but at the same time, you know, it was Greece's democratically elected choice. You know,
yes, it was. Well, that's fine. So you want the democratically elected choice, which is you sent the guy over to the EU to tell them all since the EU got voted in that you all suck. Go fuck yourselves. How the hell are you going to wind up with a good deal with that's how you started for the last 5 months? Basically, it came to the point where everybody was so pissed off at him that they basically decided, fuck you, we're going to humiliate your ass, and that's what you're going to take. And you know what? And if you, and you know what? The thing is that they knew they had him by the balls. And he was moron enough to play them all the way to that point. Because he knew it, which is the worst thing. He knew he had no cards. He had been bluffing for months with no cards at all, knew about it, and knew he was going to go to bend over. Shit, he even went on TV after he came back and said, yeah, the deal sucks. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, I had to sign it. I'm like, really? What a loser. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm sorry. It was a lot of bluster and bluff and talk and nothing to back it up. Not one fucking thing.
If the approach really was screw you, Europe, then as you said, he should have been planning all along for a Euro exit.
Exactly right.
And how can we do that in the best way possible? Because, you know, because there's a very strong argument to say that, you know, being part of the Eurozone has not been good for Greece.
That's right. You could have argued that. Yes.
You could have argued from the very beginning, this isn't working for us. We want out. We are leaving. Here's an orderly plan over the next 6 months to a year for us to leave.
Right. But he did not lift one fucking finger to do anything like that. So by that, you knew he wasn't serious. That's the problem.
So, do you think that's still an option? Do you think there's still a chance that they'll leave? Or are we done?
No, not at all, no. I think that they're going to have to renegotiate this deal. I think they basically jammed it down his throat because he was being a dick. I think his government's going to fall apart over the fucking deal. That I do think. And somebody's going to have to come back in and try to, like, you know, with a face that isn't, like, you know...
Well, do you think if, let's say his government falls apart, do you think Greece will elect the next guy as one to try to make the deal work? Or do you think they're going to elect another person that says, you know, he didn't do a good enough job of telling Europe to go to hell?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is that the Greeks right now are like 60%+ saying they want to stay in the Euro, but you can't.
Well, like I saw a poll. I saw a poll today, for instance, that said despite the referendum 2 weeks ago saying we don't want to take the deal, and the fact that this deal is essentially the same deal,
right?
The polls now say there's 60% or 70% of the Greeks in favor of the deal.
What the fuck are they smoking in Greece?
Now, you can argue exactly like you did that they were hoping the first time around that it would result in a better deal. But now that it didn't, they'd still rather do this than not.
Apparently. Like, it shows that they don't want to leave the Euro, period. Bottom line.
And I think polls have consistently said that.
Exactly.
They don't want the austerity. They don't want the spending cuts.
But they don't want to leave the Euro.
They don't want to leave the Euro.
Right. You can't have both. You can't have it both ways. So, anyway.
Okay, and we still don't believe that there's any, like, this isn't going to, like, cause any sort of domino effect.
No, not at all. Look, like, right now, you know, once this deal's in place, I mean, the ECB is going to start rolling the printing presses, you know, again, pretty soon. And banks will reopen in Greece, and that's it. There's not going to be a default. There's nothing or whatever. I mean, you know, everything's just back, you know. It's kind of like, you know, feels a little bit like sometimes obviously far more over the brink because all the banks closed and everything. Kind of like the fucking like debt ceiling negotiations in the U.S. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, whatever.
We're going to have another one of those budget things in a few months, aren't we?
Woohoo! Yeah. Yeah, another dog and pony. Yes, absolutely. We never have enough of those.
Can we shut down the government again? Maybe sometime in the next, I don't know, right in the middle of all the primary stuff.
That would be great. You know? That would be fantastic. You know, maybe Donald Trump will make another speech about some other country, some other immigrants that he hates.
Okay, with that, we're done with Greece. We'll be back with a lightning round. And yeah, we will probably mention Donald Trump, amongst other things. Back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay. We are back. So, Yvonne.
Back.
Lightning round.
Yeah. I go first?
Sure. Why don't you go first?
Ellen Pao resigned.
Oh, Reddit.
Yep.
Reddit has been imploding.
Yes.
So the bottom line, there was all kinds of controversy over, you know, sort of toxic subreddits where all kinds of really awful stuff was going on and censorship of that. And then apparently the Reddit fired one person who is in charge of running the Ask Me Anything things that Reddit does, and the community got really upset and shut down a huge portion of the site, said it was a last straw, they weren't getting enough support from moderators, blah blah blah. Then Ellen Pao is pushed out, but apparently you know, you've got all of these sort of people on Reddit who were very upset that they were shutting down some of these toxic subreddits. And as it turns out, she was apparently one of the last ones on the board fighting to not shut these things down and fighting for the idea of let's promote the positive stuff, but let's not censor anybody. They can have their own little thing in their little corner as long as they're not bothering anybody. And now there's probably going to be further crackdowns on that stuff. And it's just a freaking mess. And this is what happens to a bunch of online communities where you get, like, you've got all kinds of really positive stuff, but then you've got an undercurrent of people who want to be awful online. And then the you know, administrators of the system fundamentally have to decide, are they going to be heavy-handed to stop the awful people, or are they going to let the awful people change the nature of the site? Or, I don't know. I've babbled. What you brought it up. What do you think?
Well, I think, obviously the big brouhaha that happened had been brewing for a while, all the changes that are Reddit. But I guess for whatever reason, the fact that they terminated this very popular employee with a lot of the editors is like one of the, I think it seemed like it was a very shocking to a lot of people, and it caused like quite a lot of people to like lean against her. And the fact that even to this day, this is the weirdest thing, they still haven't explained why they terminated her, by the way.
Yeah,
not to this day.
They're not publicly, but of course they say, you know, hey, it's a private matter, that's a confidentiality thing. There has been some speculation online. Reddit recently enacted a policy where they were trying to move everybody to their San Francisco office. She worked out of New York and didn't want to move.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
You mean to tell me? Oh my God! Because there's been a couple of Silicon Valley companies with that shit. Okay, like, all right. So wait a minute. It all had to do because she physically wasn't in San Francisco. That's just retarded.
That has not been confirmed, but there have been.
If that's the case, then that, you know what? It's a bigger fucking reason why she should have fucking been fired.
Why?
Because Alan Powell should have been.
Here's the other thing.
Alan Powell should have been fired.
No, well, here's the other thing on that. Apparently, and the CEO always gets, you know, credit or blame for whatever happens, and there's good reasons for that. But she was not involved at all in this decision. It was somebody underneath her who's still there, who was actually, you know, in charge of this decision and firing the person and all that. But she sort of took the bullet.
Well, I'm sorry, but you know what? That company is not that big. Yeah, but that company is not that big. A decision to terminate somebody, an employee like that, probably had to get at least a view from her. And the fact that the fact about being tone deaf is the fact that, Jesus, you don't realize, because I think one of the things that everybody in the community have been hearing is that they have not been listening to all the people in the community for a long time. And if they would have realized how important the person was to the people managing
then they would have bent over backwards for her.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I think that's why this caused such a big...
And who knows? There might have been something else going on behind the scenes, some sort of conflict that hasn't been, you know, out there. But that's the only, like, speculation that I've seen that seems to have, like, something behind it, is that it was all about, like, a relocation policy where they were trying to centralize everybody in Silicon Valley.
Well, there's been... Yeah, I mean, that's been something that's been happening with a lot of companies, my ex-employer included, and a whole bunch of other people, where maybe not precisely to Silicon Valley, but that they've, like... I had a conversation with somebody that I know, then they decided to move to another company, and they were told, basically, that they had to move from wherever the hell they live to somewhere in Texas or something. And he was like, screw you, I'm not moving. And I'm like, you know, go somewhere else. I think I do believe to a certain extent in trying to get people, like, co-located in certain places, but I just don't think that making that be a completely inflexible thing is just stupid. That's my take.
Okay. We're doing really well on having our lightning round topics go 5 minutes.
Anyway, all right.
That's fine. My topic, Cosby.
Cosby. Well,
yeah, the whole stuff about Cosby, I thought everybody in the world
needs to go to jail.
Yeah. I thought everybody had pretty much.
I said that. I mean, I say that with a heavy heart. I really used to like Cosby very much. He spoke at our graduation, if you don't remember.
I don't remember.
You don't remember this? He was our commencement speaker, you idiot.
I had no idea.
You were there!
Are you sure it wasn't for your grad school that he was
commencement
speaker? Because I don't remember this at all.
It was at Carnegie Mellon.
Okay, I don't remember.
The stupid story about the very overachieving student called Lee Duc Tho. I remember this. Who had, you know, remember this part? Who had they're talking about, he was making fun of, like, you know, how you get these guys that are the summa cum laude or whatever. The son of a bitch that has a 4.2 GPA, you know, has a job, doesn't sleep, does this, not that, lived a fucking thing, is involved in the community, and, you know, he's making fun of that. Yes, that was at our commencement.
Oh, I have no memory of that whatsoever.
Sakes.
Anyway, yeah, but apparently he's a serial rapist, which is fun. Yeah, good. Yeah, and I thought everybody had come to this conclusion essentially, you know, 6 to 9 months ago when the last set of, like, women came out, because there have been accusations against him for years and years and years. But
technical difficulties, technical difficulties, technical difficulties.
Okay.
From
you're back.
Okay, there are documents released from his testimony from a number of years ago,
yes,
where he basically admitted it. He said that, yes, he gave women drugs and to have sex with them.
Yeah, about deposition sometime in the 80s, it seemed like.
And this was his pattern, apparently, for decades and decades and decades, that he actually had people on his staff that would sort of invite women up to where he was after shows and stuff like this, and he would drug them, and once they were completely out of it, he would have sex with them. And this is by any definition rape. I mean, come on. And and so, you know, and it took people forever and ever to take these things seriously because, you know, it was Cliff Huxtable. You know, Cliff Huxtable wouldn't do that. He's a nice guy. No, apparently not.
Apparently not.
Okay, your turn again.
Uber being cracked down.
Oh, what's happening with Uber now?
Well, you know,
something in California.
It was actually in Florida. Two counties in Florida.
There was a court case in California too that came out today.
But
go ahead.
Well, I don't. Well, you can mention about that, but what I can tell you is like Broward County basically made it so difficult for them to do business. They decided to completely withdraw at the end of this month. And so did Monroe County, where Key West is. Broward County is where Fort Lauderdale is. Monroe County is where Key West is, and they're doing the same thing. Mm. They actually started arresting Uber drivers, flat out.
So the one in California earlier today, Uber should be suspended in California and fined $7.3 million, judge says.
Well, here's the problem, that they're also having an issue with the fact that they're trying to treat their drivers as contractors, and apparently there's been a whole bunch of legal analysis and law that apparently is not on Uber's side on this. Many people love Uber, and I know there's a lot of Uber lovers, but here's the key problems that they have. Number one. They're not working within. There's a lot of legislating cars for hire, and they've tried to completely go around it. Okay, right. and they've not done a good job. Okay, and I think they're going to wind up almost like fucking like who was it? Ariel, almost that route. I think they're going to wind up almost on that route. Okay, all right, because of the way that they're trying to take their business model. Okay, I got to tell you. That's my thinking. The way
and look, here's
the second thing is they're trying to get around labor laws at the same time, and they're not doing a good job of that either. Okay, by the way. So the
thing with all of this is, I mean, I like the general idea of the model of, you know, sort of first of all, you know, make the cool little electronic app for like ordering your car and stuff. That's cool. I like the whole idea of the sharing economy where, you know, people can just say, hey, I've got some extra time in my car. I'll make myself available for a few hours and see what happens. But, you know, if you're going to do that, you have to, in order for it to all work out nicely, you have to do it in sort of a fair way. And I recognize, like, you know, some of the laws that Uber is going around, like you said, really are antiquated and we're getting in the way of innovation.
They may well be, but they are what they are.
But they are what they are. And also, you kind of have to live within the law you have and you know, work to get it changed if you think it needs to be changed. But also some of those laws, as much as they might be... in some ways anti-innovation because they're written in ways that are very stifling. At the same time, the purpose of many of them is to protect workers from being exploited in unfair ways by employers that they don't have leverage against.
But they are also made to protect customers. Okay.
True. Look, there are
there was a lot of safety issues. There was a lot of reasons, like, for example, why the hell, for example, against like you getting like gypsy cabs, guys without a license, guys without cars inspected, guys that, for example, wind up fucking like going and hijacking you. Okay, right, because you took the wrong car. Because I had people that happened to people, okay, in some other countries, okay? Uber operates worldwide, okay? So it's a concern. And so they have really tried to go around a lot of those regulations that were put in place in order to protect people, in order to implement their business model. And while, you know, I just think that they're – I don't see how that can be successful in the long run. That's my thinking. You need it to work. And because I've seen other companies have tried to do these kinds of changes where they've gone first and they've worked and they've gone successful by getting people to change the laws. They've hired lobbyists. They've hired people. Then they go in. They get the legislation changed. They make it more favorable to them. And then they start being able to roll out the business model. And that's not what they've been doing.
Well,
they've been
just like example of that is Tesla, because they run up against the dealership model in lots of states that's enshrined right by law. But in the states where they're not allowed to sell, they don't sell.
Exactly.
And they work to try to change that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, so I think part of the problem here is that, you know, if you actually put in all of the protections you're talking about for to make sure the employees are fair, to make sure you've got safety, all of these things, then one of the potential pitfalls is there's the chance that once you add that all in, Uber's price advantage disappears.
Well, shit, the problem is that that's part of the fucking problem. I'm sorry, but I think for all we're talking about the sharing economy, it's a whole bunch of fucking bullshit, because one of the things that Uber was telling drivers, oh, your personal insurance will cover you. Bullshit. Car insurance doesn't cover a car being for hire. It doesn't.
Right.
Okay? It's a very different transaction. And so I'm sorry, there's a price advantage because Uber is trying to lull you into the belief that you are getting the same protections and coverages that you would get in a car for hire, when it's not true. And I'm like, you know, yeah, they're making a price advantage simply because they're doing everything outside of outside of the law, to a certain extent, in many instances. And I know that a lot of people like it because they say, well, the cars are better and stuff and whatever. But I just don't. The problem is that when something goes wrong, it's reliable to go very, very wrong. That's reality. Okay. So, I know people love the service. I understand why. But at the same time, I don't know where this is going to go with right now with all this opposition.
Okay.
I don't. So,
moving on. I want to get like two more things in, maybe, and
yep,
then we'll stop. The next one. I promised we'd say it. Trump. Trump is leading the more Republican polls.
Yes. And,
you know, I always say don't pay attention to the individual polls. Look at the poll averages. I will mention two poll averages right now. The last few times we've talked about this, we've used the Real Clear Politics average. At this point, Trump is in second place in the Real Clear Politics average. It has Bush at 17 and Trump at 10.8. But another poll average that uses slightly different techniques and is actually a little bit more sophisticated is what used to be pollster.com. It's now part of Huffington Post. But if you go to pollster.com and look at the National Republican primary, you'll see it. At the moment, their trend has Trump at number one at 16.6%, followed by Jeb Bush at 14.1% and Rand Paul at 8.1%, then Ben Carson, and then Scott Walker. That's their top
five. Yes! Trump!
And
Trump!
Now, look, nobody believes this is going to last. You know, everybody believes this is a, you know, he got into the race, he was very bellicose, he made a big splash, he's got a spike here. Everybody thinks this is going to go down again. I mean, if Trump is still at the top of the polls when we get to the debates in a little less than a month, you know, I will be so incredibly shocked. However, it would be funny as hell.
Yes!
But yes! Nobody really expects that. But at the same time, the fact that he's shot to the top here,
it just shows you how fucked up the Republican ticket is.
Well, we're hitting the same pattern as we did 4 years ago. And I honestly didn't think it could possibly be as crazy as it was 4 years ago.
Crazier! But I am exponentially!
Because look, what was happening last time around was nobody was, I shouldn't say nobody, the vast majority of the Republican Party was not happy with Romney. They didn't want Romney. They felt like he was too centrist. They felt like he was too boring. He wasn't conservative enough. He didn't, you know, all of this stuff. They didn't want Romney. And so they kept, like, trying to look at the next shiny object. Well, okay, maybe Santorum. maybe Huckabee, maybe this, maybe that, maybe Gingrich.
I wish we had Gingrich in. I mean, that would just make it so awesome.
And so you're seeing that pattern again, where people are flailing around looking for the anti-Bush. Who can be the alternative to Bush that they can get behind? But every single one of these, part of the problem is they all appeal to a certain sliver of the base, but not to enough of it to win. Whereas, this is the same dynamic we had with McCain, same dynamic that we had with Romney. It's nobody likes them, but they're sort of like, okay.
And those of you, by the way, who, when I keep asking for Gingrich, I am going to tweet out now the press release that he gave like last year at the election, okay, at the last campaign, which honestly still deserves to be the greatest press release in a presidential campaign game ever. Okay, if you haven't read it,
It was pretty wonderful.
It was just a highlight for me of that campaign.
Anyway, but we look at these. We got Trump. Obviously, he's showing that he can appeal to that wonderful anti-Mexican part of the Republican Party.
So I guess there is an anti-Mexican part.
Oh God!
And by the way, in case you hadn't heard, he's after El Chapo escaped from prison. Apparently, his number one priority is going after Trump.
Well, excuse me, really?
Oh yeah, Trump is like asking the Secret Service to look into it because he thinks El Chapo's after him or something.
That'd be great. There you go.
So we got Donald. But everybody knows he's a whack job. If you look at his, even within the Republican Party, in this pollster trend, he's nationwide, he's at like just under 17%. But apparently you've got like something like 60 or 70% of Republicans say there's no way in hell they would ever vote for him.
Right.
Which is like, he's got the lowest favorability of anybody in this race by far. So there's no way. There's no way.
Well, he's the front runner.
Now, a number of people have pointed out there's so many people. There is no true front runner. There's nobody that's fully out of the margin of error. There's no like Hillary like person who's clearly ahead. But then you got Bush, that nobody really likes Bush either. But he's got all the money behind him. He's got the establishment behind him. He's got the most endorsements so far. 538 put out something this week basically showing how, the most reliable predictor this far out of who's going to get the nomination is not the polls, is not even money. It's the number of endorsements they've gotten from the party establishment. This follows up, and it's Bush. This follows up on research that was done by some political scientists. They wrote a book called "The Party Decides." Oh, it's on my list to eventually read.
But if it was like if we get I don't know who is behind. I mean, maybe who's the next guy that we could to make a shot up in the polls.
So the next ones we got Rand Paul. And of course, we know like there's a dedicated portion of the Libertarianist Republican.
But
again, there's this. He's got this dedicated segment that really likes him, but the rest don't like him at all. Ben Carson,
right?
And then the next two in line right now are the ones that seem to be taken the most seriously: Scott Walker and Marco Rubio. Both of which have a little bit more general appeal. Scott Walker's been going more and more conservative as he goes along, trying to polish up his conservative bona fides. The Rubio, Huckabee, Cruz, Christie, Perry, Santorum, Fiorina, Kasich, Jindal, Graham, Pataki. And then the latest one, last week I mentioned that didn't somebody else jump in? It was Jim Gilmore. Jim Gilmore jumped in
the
as well.
Fuck is
he's a Gilmore. Former governor from somewhere or other. I don't know. I don't know what the hell he's
thinking. I don't even know where he's from. Jim Gilmore? What the hell? What is he from that TV show Gilmore Girls? What the hell? You know.
No, he was a governor of Virginia from 1998 to 2002.
Yep. Okay. Well, Jesus. Gosh, no idea who this guy is. Anyway, all right. Well, we talked a lot more about the election than just a fucking lightning round. So, anyway,
sorry, I suck. Anyway, hey, I threw in some El Chapo in there.
Yeah, we threw in some El Chapo. I don't know. Anything else that I got down? Making fun of Trump. That's it. I already talked about the hookers liking your tweets. There you go. Yeah. Or at least anything on your Twitter
page.
Yeah,
thank you. And I screwed up by talking about all my computer problems at the beginning where no one cares. And they all turned off and didn't listen to the rest of the show because of that. Oops.
Right.
But one more computer thing I just wanted to mention.
Yeah.
Apple Music and iTunes 12.2 had an interesting bug for me.
No.
I had upgraded my iPhones and stuff. I had Apple Music going. I was playing with it. I mentioned some of that on the show, and I was having fun with it. It's cool because
I've been having fun with it. I mean, it's just a lot of different.
The main thing I like about it is how I can mingle my own library with the Apple Music stuff.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Once I upgraded my iTunes so that it also knew about Apple Music, it decided that all the voice memos that I'd ever saved off my phone were music.
Great.
And so, like, if I went to shuffle my music, it would be music, some recording I made in 2012 on my phone. Some voice recording. And, like, I mix a lot of weird things in with my music, but I had not mixed in all my voice memos.
And
I don't use voice memos all that often, but every once in a while I'd record something, but for whatever reason, and they're just all mixed in with my stuff. And so I'm like, okay, that sucks. But let me go in and edit it, because basically the playlist I listen to most is like the least listened to 500 things that were in the category music. That's what I listen to most often. I shuffle that because it basically plays the new stuff I have more often when I have that. So that's the playlist I use. And so it was all over there. And I'm like, okay, so I just have to tell it that this isn't music and it'll no longer be mixed in with all my music, either in that playlist or just in the music folder.
Okay.
So I go and I do the thing to get the metadata and I go to change it and it didn't give... the only choice was music. I couldn't change it to anything else. So I'm like, thank you so much, Apple. I really appreciate this.
It's hard once in a while. You got to skip something.
So I actually went and fixed it. The way I ended up fixing it was I actually just copied all of those voice memos to a folder on my hard drive and deleted them off of iTunes. So I kept all my voice memos.
I thought you were just going to listen to the voice memos every once in a while.
You know, I thought about it, but no. I already have like a couple old audiobooks that I got free samples of in shuffled in with my music occasionally. I don't need any more.
You know? Okay.
And I have a few like old political speeches, things like that. So I already have enough of that. I don't need my own little voice memos where I recorded one little thing or whatever. Anyway, thank you, Apple, for all the lovely quality control that you've had lately on all kinds of products, including this particular bug on iTunes, but not limited to that. And I know they released a 12.2.1 or something that
may have fixed it.
It may have fixed it, but I already dealt with it. So. Whatever. Oh, that's all I got.
That's all you got?
I got. I don't want to talk about the Planned Parenthood video thing. There's nothing else to say about El Chapo. Whatever.
El Chapo. I don't know. So he's.
There's a reward. We should catch him, Yvonne.
How much is the reward?
$3.5 million.
Fuck! If I knew where he is, I'd fucking go catch him.
There you go. But no.
I'll mean, at least I'll bring a couple of people with me to go do it.
There was a bigger reward for Osama bin Laden, and I didn't see you going out and getting him.
Well, he's a lot further away, and I don't speak any Arabic. I mean, at least I speak Spanish.
True, true.
I know where Mexico is.
I'm glad you know where Mexico is.
I know how to get there pretty cool. You know, I've been to Mexico. I know where it is. I know how to get there. I won't get lost.
Hey, now that you can fly there easily, you going to Cuba anytime soon?
You know what? At some point, maybe. But I'm not that... I was never all that... I mean, I could have done it before, and I've never been that keen on going.
My mother's been to Cuba.
I know a lot of people...
Recently, like Cuba, in the last couple of years.
I know a lot of people have been there recently. As a matter of, I mean, I got one of my best friends down here that, I mean, is... their girlfriend, they're lesbian couple, their girlfriend, she goes to Cuba, been to Cuba like in the last 12 months.
Oh, there you go.
But, yeah, I don't know, but I just, I'd never been that big, I don't know, maybe at some point. Honestly, what I've heard about Cuba, about the tourism, specifically the resorts, which there have been a number that the Europeans have built, is that basically they kind of suck. To be honest with you, and that they have a lot of visitors to go once, and then they realize they suck, and then they don't go back again.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
So yeah. So it hasn't really been like a
nice. Maybe it'll start getting better now.
It may start getting better now. Yes, that may happen. It's just like up to now. That's what I've heard. So.
We are done with this show.
Yes.
So thank
you. We need to be, because it's run longer than long than long.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We did an awful lightning round, okay? All right? We need a fucking timer again.
I need to bring back the timers.
Yes, we need the timer back badly.
And like I said the other week, we need to hire somebody who actually, when the timer goes off, will just like slap us until we shut up.
Right, yes.
Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us. You have made it through yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. We congratulate anybody who actually makes it to the end of our shows.
Apparently, there's more people doing that than we ever thought. So, okay. So, I thought it was closer to zero, and then I realized that there are people doing
actually
that.
People listening.
Yes.
So, if you are one of those listeners, and especially if you're a new listener, we would love to hear from you. Check us out on Facebook. We're Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Like us there, comment there, share with your friends, all that kind of stuff. Or you can reach us on Twitter. Yvonne mentioned a number of things he tweeted, and he talks about me tweeting things, and apparently certain people like my tweets. although Yvonne's seen this more than I have, so
it's only been. Listen, you mentioned it the first time, and then I went the next time it happened. I went, decided to click through it. There you go. Boom, boom.
You know, real people favorite my stuff too sometimes.
I know they do. I know they do. But
anyway, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, Abulsme. Yvonne is at IMBOU. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter as well. And if you don't like doing any of those things, you can email me abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Oh, or you can go to us at curmudgeonscorner.com with a hyphen, curmudgeons-corner.com, because some guy had curmudgeonscorner.com without a hyphen before us.
Bastard.
I know. Damn him. He's not even using the damn site.
Oh, bastard.
Well. Yeah. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. That's it. Tell your friends to listen and have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.